We're back with more of Lake Effect on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. We've been talking with our astronomy contributor recently about how things form in the universe, things such as stars.
But this month, we'll focus a little closer to home, or maybe a lot closer to home, and talk about how planets like our own come about. Jean Creighton is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium, and she explains that, like on this show, stars come before planets.
So the nebula, so that's just a fancy word for cloud, that slowly made a disk shape. The center of the disk gives rise to the star. Okay, so now we have a bright object that's make light and gives energy. But there's still a whole lot of material left in the disk. And although the sun, when it turns on, when nuclear fusion starts in the core, it will make such a lot of energy, so much radiation, that it will sweep away some of the material left in the disk. Not all of it is going to be swept away. Some of it is going to feel mutual attraction to other sort of parcels of material. And slowly they start building planets.
Okay, so we're talking lots and lots of space, though, for the disk, right?
Yes.
Many light years worth.
The original solar nebula could have been up to 1,000 times bigger than the current solar system. So not many light years, but maybe one.
Okay.
Maybe less.
But still a lot of territory.
A lot of territory. But in some cases, serendipity will bring, you know, two chunks of material together. It's like a snowball, you can imagine. You know, you start with a little something in your hand and you roll it in the snow and it can pick up more material as it goes.
As it gets bigger.
Yeah. And what's interesting and perhaps unfair, but that's how it is, the rich get richer. The bigger you are, the more material you attract toward yourself. So those planets that for whatever reason started bigger are going to get bigger faster than the ones that started small.
I have a question, and then you may have just been about to get to this, but what changes a couple of lumps of material getting together into a planet? Where do we reach critical mass, as it were, to actually have it be turned into a planet with a core and however it's going to look?
Well, the core comes later.
Okay.
First of all, you just have to build a protoplanet, right? You have to build something that has enough mass to pull itself, first of all, to overcome rigid forces. I mean, you can't take a chair and make it into a sphere unless it has a certain amount of mass. Eventually, it does have enough mass to pull itself into what we would call a sphere or a ball. Now, the other interesting piece is that the solar system had more or less the same material, right? It's mostly hydrogen and helium. So by the time you take into account those two things, you basically have accounted for 98% of all the stuff in the solar system. All other elements are the rest of the 2%. But when you're close to the sun, all the light, volatile things like water, ammonia, methane, all those things are in gas form because it's so hot. So the building blocks that you have close to the sun are just the heavy stuff. Well, there's not a lot of that. So I like to imagine it as a container with my hydrogen, helium, and my pebbles. I take my bucket close to the sun. All the stuff that can evaporate will, most of it will. And all I'm left is with these little marbles, little pebbles that will come together and make these relatively small planets close to the sun. So those are the Earth-like planets, what we call terrestrial planets. Past a certain point where water can freeze, and ammonia and some of the other things too that are plentiful, well, now if I take the bucket over there, these guys are frozen. So now they are fair game to build planets, and that's why the planets in the outer part of the solar system are considerably bigger than the ones close to the sun.
They're made out of some of that other stuff that would get burned away here, closer in.
That's right. So they are made mostly of what the solar system had originally, whereas we're left with literally the scraps. You know, we have our planet has very little hydrogen. If any, it's all locked in water. We just don't have helium to speak of on our planet, whereas we have silica and other of those heavier things that could survive this close to the sun.
I just love the idea that we're made out of scraps. But yet here we are talking about the rest of the universe.
Yeah, so for scraps, we're doing pretty well.
We're doing pretty well. And, you know, as far as we know, nothing on Jupiter or Uranus is talking about us.
That's right. That's right. As far as we can tell.
As far as we know at this point. So, okay, everything pulls together and creates a planet.
That's right. Now, as time goes on, the planet still continues to attract material toward it. And quite frankly, the solar system early on in its history had what we call heavy bombardment. There was so much debris still that all the planets and their moons got bombarded by things. And we had an atmosphere, so that protected us to some extent. But you see the full effect when you look at the moon. Lots and lots of craters, multiple layers of them. Some of them are quite significant, some substantial. So that reminds us that we're grateful that our solar system has calmed down. And most of that material has been, in fact, either kicked out entirely of the system or fallen on the planets or, you know, absorbed. Now, not everything has been absorbed.
I was going to say, we still have asteroids.
We still have some leftovers from that very early time, and that's why we're so interested in asteroids, in comets, in the Kuiper Belt. And of course, we should put in a plug for New Horizons, the spacecraft that's on its way right now to visit Pluto, which is one of the older Kuiper Belt objects in the solar system. Again, these are objects that are mostly beyond the orbit of Neptune. They are forming in mostly a ring. The majority of them are not nearly as big as Pluto. Most of them can be disturbed sufficiently to create lovely comets.
Yeah, we just don't want them too close to
us. No, we never want them too close. No.
They close do their thing. That we can see. Yeah. Stay over there. Yeah. It's kind of a not in my backyard, but kind of in my backyard. Enough so I can see you.
Yes.
But beyond that, don't get any closer.
No. Yeah.
And so we've talked about this before. We have some sort of early warning system, don't we? We're monitoring the skies for incoming incursions of possible comets and asteroids.
Well, comets are much smaller, so they're not quite as alarming. And frankly, we're not the big player for comets. Comets are making a beeline for the sun, the big gravitational field in our solar system. And of course, sometimes they get diverted by Jupiter because Jupiter is another significant player in our neighborhood. But asteroids are another story. There are asteroids that are in fairly near Earth orbits, and in principle, they could hit the Earth. So I think we're tracking about 8,000 of those. And we're tracking things that are over a kilometer big so that if something that would be civilization ending was coming, we would do whatever we needed to do to convince it to go some other place.
Exactly. Just like divert it.
That's right. Divert is the correct term.
Yep. So, well, here we are in the solar system on a planet that formed out of scraps. I'm never going to forget that. That's going to be in my mind for the rest of my life. But it's a good viewing time, though, for other planets in our system, isn't it?
We can see Venus in the early evening. And Venus, of course, is the brightest object in the sky after the sun and the moon. So the way I describe it is it looks like an airplane. If the airplane is moving, it's an airplane. If the airplane is still, it's Venus.
That bright?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You can't confuse Venus with any other thing.
Okay.
And then Jupiter is high in the sky when the sun sets, a little after sunset. So we can see Jupiter for several hours in the evening. And Jupiter isn't quite as bright as Venus, but it is the biggest planet in our solar system. So surely that's worth celebrating.
Absolutely. Go out and raise a toast.
Indeed. And let's hope for clear skies.
And hope for clear skies. That too. So Jean Creighton, as always, such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jean Creighton is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium at UW-Milwaukee, and she is our regular astronomy contributor.